This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Writer Ed White has chronicled gay life in America through his series of autobiographical novels and his books of nonfiction. He's an excellent writer and has been our guest several times on Fresh Air. So I was interested in reading a new, well-written memoir, which is in part about him, by his nephew Keith Fleming. On the opening pages, Fleming explains that in 1976, when he was 16, a troubled kid rebelling against authority at the worst moment of his adolescence, his Uncle Ed came to his rescue. Fleming had spent most of the previous year in psychiatric hospitals. His parents were divorced. His father wanted him to remain institutionalized, but his mother got him out by signing an emergency release order. Then she called her brother, Ed White, and asked if Keith could come live with him for a while. Ed White agreed. White was in his mid-30s then and at the beginning of his literary career. Fleming's memoir is called The Boy with the Thorn in His Side. I asked Keith Fleming if he had any idea whether his uncle was going to be pleased about his arrival or resentful.
Well, I think that what's interesting is that there'd been a kind of rehearsal 2 years earlier for this whole idea of my going off to New York and living with him. In other words, if I went to live with him at 16, at 14, he had shocked my mother by telling her, how about if Keith comes and lives with me in New York? At that time, she had said, absolutely not. And she confided to me later that her thinking was, it wouldn't be good for me to be living with a young gay guy who was going out all the time picking up men. But obviously she changed her tune 2 years later, you know, namely because she saw me rotting away in this miserable adolescent psych ward. And suddenly her brother, my uncle, had become sort of the last resort for me in her mind. And in my mind, I suppose I was remembering that initial invitation he'd made to me. And so I wasn't worried that he was going to be annoyed.
When your mother sent you to New York to live with your uncle, how come she didn't take you in herself?
That's something that I kind of leave very mysterious in the book. And I think it has to do with, she and I are a lot alike in that we're very, we can be very temperamental and strong-willed sometimes. And it's my uncle who's so diplomatic and whose eyes seem to show so much more calmness. I guess that's a better way of saying it. My mother and I are both very intense people. And we'd found ourselves arguing about my not taking out the garbage, and it would turn into big arguments. So she must have been thinking, maybe he'll do better with Ed, who had already requested that Keith be sent to him 2 years earlier.
When Ed White was young, when he was, I guess, still a teenager, he had his own encounters with psychiatry. He went to a psychiatrist because he was gay and thought that there was probably something terribly wrong with that. The psychiatrist's attempts to convert him to heterosexuality never quite took. But do you think that his unhappy encounter with psychiatry helped him relate to your unhappy year in psychiatric hospitals?
Yeah, in fact, very much so. I think that, for one thing, we each had these sensationally bad shrinks who also had a lot in common with each other. His shrink was someone who was completely confident that he alone could cure my uncle. And my shrink, too, felt that all other shrinks were softies, that only his hardcore treatment was going to cure me. And yet, for example, my uncle's shrink was always falling asleep during the sessions. And the same thing with my shrink, because he slept only 2 hours a night. He had something like 200 patients scattered all over Chicagoland in different hospitals. And so the funny thing is that my uncle and I also shared this funny vulnerability to our shrinks. We didn't realize how terrible they were then. We felt that we were freaks who didn't quite deserve to be part of the human race, my uncle because of his homosexuality, and me because of this terrible, terrible acne that I had. So we were fatherless for all purposes. My uncle and I, we each had a divorced dad who we weren't seeing much, and so we were very vulnerable to this psychiatric authority. And only later did we both realize, oh my God, that was a monster that was trying to treat me.
My guest is Keith Fleming. He's written a new memoir called The Boy with the Thorn in His Side. And it's his coming-of-age story that includes the year that he lived with his uncle, the writer Ed White, in New York. Ed White is now a celebrated novelist and biographer. Where was he in his career when you came to live with him?
He was very early in it. And I think that's what makes it all the more extraordinary that he was willing to take on a teenage ward like me, because he was very poor. Where he was a single novel of his had been published, Forgetting Elena, and it had sold only something like 300 copies, though one of these copies had been read by Vladimir Nabokov, who happened to be my uncle's favorite writer. And when Nabokov had been asked, who are the two best American writers today, Nabokov had replied, John Updike and Edmund White. But that was wonderful, the praise from Nabokov, but my uncle was very poor in 1976 when I first came to live with him. In fact, he was earning his living by ghostwriting a U.S. history textbook.
When you were a kid growing up, what did it mean to you that your Uncle Ed was gay? How was that treated by your parents, your grandparents, and how did you see it?
Yeah, well, I think that that's something that I found so interesting to explore as I was writing the early pages of the book, because I think it's in writing that we sometimes think. My uncle will often say, I don't know what I think about something until I start writing about it. And I found myself remembering all of these things I hadn't been so conscious of. I was 12 when I found out he was gay, and it was totally inadvertent. My mother and grandmother, Ed's mother, would often tell me that Uncle Ed is maybe going to get married to his friend Marilyn. And one weekend when I was with my uncle at age 12, I saw that there was another woman around, another woman who seemed quite mad about Uncle Ed. So I asked my mother, which woman do you think Ed's going to get married to? And then she sat me down, and it was a big scene, and it was, well, honey, neither. Your Uncle Ed is gay. Do you know what this means? And that word gay to me sounded more like, of course I knew what it meant. I knew it meant homosexual. But I couldn't relate my Uncle Ed's being gay to what I heard on the playground, which would be, oh, those two kids are perverts and they play around with each other. For me, my sophisticated uncle being gay seemed like an entirely different thing, almost a kind of a stylistic thing. And I saw his being gay as being his very hip clothes that he would show up in, the ripped jeans, and the cigarettes that he smoked so elegantly, the way that he exhaled through his nostrils, his whole manner of talking, this sort of wonderful musical rising and falling. And so his being gay in a way was really a name for his sophisticated style.
For a whole sensibility.
Right, right.
You were a 16-year-old straight kid when you came to live with your uncle Ed. Was it understood by all of his friends that you were off limits to them?
Well, you know, the funny thing is that I've forgotten it, but my uncle just the other day was telling me, he said, don't you remember when some of my friends came by one day and they were all camping around and saying, you know, aren't you going to go fruity to me? And I can't remember it. But it must have happened. But I think the reason I can't remember it is it must have been only once. And in fact, my uncle's gay roommate very much saw me as a straight kid. And he would tease me by calling himself Mom, he'd say, hi, Keith, Mom's home.
What are some of the tastes or interests that you were exposed to through living with your uncle?
Well, I think the first one was the music that he was always playing on his record player. He would write at home, and he loved to kind of be bathed in music. And I was just an ordinary Midwestern kid who, you know, who's played folk music and so on, and some pop music. But suddenly to be in this apartment with this very lyrical music going on all the time, this serious music, as my uncle sort of jokingly told me it was called. He loved Handel's Concerto Grosso, and in those old days with the turntable, the Concerto Grosso was so long that it was four records that would be stacked one on top of another, and it would sort of go on for hours. And I started loving this music and feeling that my own emotions were being deepened and ennobled and improved. And obviously, literature would be another thing. I came to Ed as a big fan of Kurt Vonnegut and was told that Vonnegut was a strictly adolescent author. But the first books my uncle gave me were Lolita and Swan's Way, and something called Lord Chesterfield's Letters to His Son. And it was certainly very interesting reading.
My guest is Keith Fleming. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest Keith Fleming is the author of the memoir, The Boy with the Thorn in His Side. In the year that you lived with your uncle Ed White in New York, this was 1976. This was like pre-AIDS. It was an era of a lot of partying and cruising that your uncle was participating in. And did he try to hide any of that from you and make himself seem more proper or whatever, more straight-laced? Or did he kind of talk to you about the lifestyle he was living and why he chose to live that way and what it meant to him?
Yeah. Well, I think he struck a wonderful balance. I think he still was able to continue his own highly adventurous sex life, but did it outside our apartment. And, you know, I think it could have been a little too weird for me if I would wake up in the night to the laughter of an orgy that he'd brought back to the apartment. So he kept everything out of the apartment. And instead, to me, he would always seem like a very glamorous guy. I mean, I think young people are always admiring people who seem to be out having fun. And that's the way he would seem. He would go out. I'd be doing my homework at the kitchen table at 10 o'clock in the evening. And he would have just been climbed out of the shower. Now he had his leather jacket on and his jeans. And he was going to go down to the village and go to his bars or maybe cruise over to... And he would tell me about this. He'd say, oh, last night I was cruising down in this old warehouse on the Hudson River and, you know, met the sexiest boy there or something. And
a lot of people would think, well, you were sent off for a year to someone who's, you know, a classic bad influence. He's out late at night cruising bars, having sex with different people. You know, this is not something you expose an impressionable teenager to, et cetera.
Right.
Are there ways in which you think that he was, that what other people would have found to be a really bad influence was actually a good influence on you?
Well, absolutely, because he's a very civilized man. And just this book he'd given me, Lord Chesterfield's Letters to His Son, was my uncle was very much a modern Lord Chesterfield. There was a place and time for everything. He would be, Lord Chesterfield advises people to never rise later than 10, no matter when they went to bed. And my uncle had this whole self-discipline, and during the day in the apartment, he was always working quite hard, and he had everything compartmentalized. So he was far from being a bad influence. He was actually an example of a highly productive person who manages to do it all. And the sexual shenanigans that he'd get into every night would only start long after the work day had finished.
You had a terrible case of acne when you showed up at your uncle's house, and he immediately talked to you about it, sent you to a good dermatologist, and it cleared up, or at least vastly improved. How did it change you when your face cleared up?
Yeah, well, before I talk about that, I just wanted to say that I think it was so amazing to me that no one else, that doctors and nurses and parents had never occurred to them, maybe this kid needs some kind of treatment here. It was a truly severe case, and I just felt like the Elephant Man or something. And so I think what I've heard from other acne survivors is that, well, sometimes parents will think, well, it's just a passing thing. It's not that big a deal. And it's a tribute to my uncle's empathy that he immediately grasped that this was the thorn in my side. This was the big thing. And yes, it instantly made me feel that I'd rejoin the human race. It was that dramatic.
He also sent you to private school.
Yes. And again, with as little money as he was making, that was, again, very quite extraordinary. I learned my uncle had had a fantasy when he was a teenager that he would be rescued by this wonderful New Yorker. And though in my uncle's fantasy, this wonderful New Yorker becomes a lover, it's interesting to me that a generation later, my uncle's old fantasy, he was now fulfilling the role of the wonderful New Yorker, playing the role that he wished someone had played for him when he was a teenager.
Your uncle has basically chronicled his life and times through a series of novels and short stories. And in chronicling his life and times, he's told a lot of the larger story of what it's meant to be gay in America in the 70s and in the 80s. And in that sense, you know, because he's such a celebrated and well-known writer, he's something of a public figure. So after he's kind of couched his life in fiction, here you are coming along and writing a nonfiction story of your life, which involves telling part of the story of his life. Did you ask him almost for permission to tell the story before writing it, or ask him how he'd react to it, if he would mind?
I think I might have, but what I think is interesting is that he calls his autobiographical novels autofiction. And since I know him and his life, as I read them, I can see that often they're pretty straight transcriptions from his life experience. And he sometimes will say, well, what I like about writing a novel is I don't have to make sure I know the date and I don't have to check all the facts. And I can just write things, you know, sort of true to my feelings. So I would say, in a way, that my memoir is just taking his autofiction one step further.
One downside I could see about being Ed White's nephew and writing a book that is in part about Ed White is that if it were me, I admire his writing very much, and I'd feel like he was an editor sitting on my shoulder, reading each paragraph and finding all of its deficiencies.
Right.
I think I'd find it very stymieing. How did you deal with that?
I actually didn't feel that, and I think that I've had a lot, you know, even though this is my first book and I'm 40, in my mind, I've been a writer since I've been, you know, 20 or something. And I've had, in other words, I've always, I guess, had my, in myself, I've had confidence in my own writerly ability. Part of that might have begun when I was 16. My uncle would say to me things like, you know, you really have talent. You're going to be the last writer in America. which to me sounded impressive until I started to think, oh, actually, that's pretty sad. Like the last idiot who's still scribbling away in the age of video.
Are you close now with your uncle?
Yes. And he and I will actually be doing, I will be his opening act on his reading tour next month, which should be quite a trip.
Well, Keith Fleming, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Keith Fleming's new memoir is The Boy with the Thorn in His Side. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.